This is episode 287 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Yeah, I'm joining you from my underground bunker while I hide out from the, you know, the Virapocalypse or whatever they're calling it. Virageddon.
Virageddon. I think I like Virageddon the best. I haven't heard it yet, but I think that's what we're going to go with.
Okay, well, that's trademarked now, so nobody steal that.
Nobody steal that. I also enjoy how quick you are at updating the entire scenery of your Virapocalypse. Oh, wait, I just forgot what we were calling it.
Virageddon.
Virageddon. your studio looks exactly the same, although you're doing the show from underground now.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point. If you make it look the same, nobody knows which place you're broadcasting from.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want me giving that up.
No, we need to keep, what is it? Is it spec ops? Is that what the thing to be covert? Isn't that what they say?
You were so close. It's OPSEC.
I don't know the military jargon. You're the one in the Navy, so.
Yeah, and it's only been, 15 years since. Yeah.
But, you know, there's some other folks that have been kind of secretive over the last couple of weeks, including John Schneider and Pete Carroll. They had some press conferences that I'm sure you've talked with some other folks about at the Combine, but interesting information from there. And, you know, not a lot of information coming out of Clowney's camp about what might happen with that. It's secrecy everywhere, is what I'm saying.
We get little bits here and there, and free agency about to kick off next week. And I'm excited for it because, yes, we'll finally get through this period. We had the opportunity to hear from Pete and John at the Combine, which, yeah, you never expect a whole lot. But what you do hear from them, you hang on every little bit of that they put out, and you dissect it every which way you can and try and get an idea of where the Seahawks are going to go moving forward. So I'm excited that next week we're going to have some real information. But before we get there, I wanted to talk a little bit, what we can come to expect in the next week, perhaps what we should be focusing on. I know a lot of folks out there, I hear a lot of people talking about things that they want versus things that the Seahawks actually need. And so I want to make sure we clarify what those two things are. I want to talk about some of the other names that are thrown out there. A lot of people interested in different prospects out there in free agency. You know, what can the Seahawks be expected to do? We had some announcements regarding comp picks. And so the draft picks have now been finalized, the entire order throughout the NFL. So that's some interesting news. And we got some coaching changes. So we do, ahead of free agency, Adam, there's still quite a bit of stuff to talk about here.
No, there absolutely is. And I like that idea of talking a little bit about needs versus wants. And, you know, maybe some of those things end up being one and the same when we talk about different position groups and things of that nature. But yeah, I do find it interesting. Some of the things floated out there by fellow fans or other writers and other media members as to what directions the Seahawks should go here over the next couple of weeks. And to be honest, I think, to begin to answer that question, we have to start with where you think this team is right at this moment. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that this next year is a championship year? Like, is this a year that you're looking at this Seahawks roster and being like, you know, if they hit a couple things here, we've got a really, really great chance of bringing home the Lombardi Trophy? Or is this a year away in your approach, like in your mind?
Yeah.
I think that's the first thing we kind of have to get at, because that would affect, I think, what John Schneider and Pete Carroll do here over the next couple weeks.
I think that Pete and John, they absolutely have to look at the season, much like the Chiefs looked at last season. You know, they were almost a play away from making the Super Bowl over the Patriots. And their biggest problem for the Chiefs was along the defensive line. And they went and they addressed that issue. They addressed the back end of their defense too, getting Tyrann Mathieu. They had a full season for the most part of Patrick Mahomes. He did go down for a couple weeks, but they did have a backup quarterback that was a guy who could, you know, at least get a couple wins here and there and keep them in play. So I think that, yeah, going into the season, especially considering where they finished last year and that they could have beaten the Green Bay Packers. They should have won the division. They were just a couple inches short of getting the NFC West title. So I think that considering all the pieces that they have on offense, their needs on defense. This can be the type of year where you go in and say, this is what we need to fix to get us where we need to be in the running for the Super Bowl in 2020.
Okay, I actually tend to agree here. I think this is an all-in kind of year, which also sets you up for being in it this year and next year, and then kind of turning over the roster again, you know, to a degree, depending on how things kind of work out.
All right, but, so with that in mind,
yeah,
this idea of needs versus wants, I try and teach this to my kids because, you know, especially when one of my girls comes up to me and says, Dad, I really need some ice cream. And I have to explain to her, you know, no, you don't need ice cream ever.
Yeah. You'll live without it.
You'll live without it. Yeah. But you may want it. But there are certain things that, you know, we need, like air and food, you know, just the basics. And there's things that the Seahawks absolutely need to be able to get them to a Super Bowl versus, you know, what are some of the nice things to have that would help get them a little bit closer, but not necessarily something that they... There's positions you can live without and still have a Super Bowl contending team.
Absolutely. And especially when you have a trigger man like Russell Wilson running the offense. And I think that's kind of one of those areas when we talk about need versus want. A lot of people talking about receiver as a position that just needs all this attention.
Yeah.
That definitely falls into the want
category. You don't need a receiver.
No, I don't believe you do. Only because you have a number one in Tyler Lockett and you have an up-and-coming star in DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. And really, I said it on the last pod I was on with you, I believe you have guys on this roster that could come in and compete for that slot position, whether that's Ursua or you know, any of the other young dudes. And all the other thing to keep in mind is that in college football, they're producing a lot more receivers than about any other position group in the entire, you know, in the entire game of football. So You're a lot more apt to come across a good player later on in the draft at the position of receiver. So I think you could spend draft capital there rather than looking at free agency and looking at it as if it's an area of extreme urgency. Plus, I mean, Russell Wilson is at that point in his career where it doesn't much matter who you trot out there with him. He makes them better. And so, as far as receiver goes, I'm not wringing my hand over that position group.
Yeah, so for guys, you know, in that Randall Cobb-type mold, DeMarcus Robinson, I think that players like that, that Seahawks fans are talking about, I think that you can hold off and probably... one of the things that we did hear from Pete and John is the idea of finding receivers who like DK, can come in and make an immediate impact. And how do you figure that out? Which... you know, the type of mentality that it takes to do that. And that can be difficult to find. As far as finding guys who can catch passes coming out of college, it's easy. It's guys who can make that transition quickly. And we saw it in a guy like Doug Baldwin, who made the transition quickly as an undrafted free agent. And then we saw a guy like Golden Tate, who was taken in the second round and took 2 or 3 years to kind of work into that position. So, and that's not something that I think any draft analyst is going to be able to tell you. That's going to take Pete and John in the meeting room with their team psychologist saying, you know, working through it with the guy and really trying to figure out what the guy is made of that would allow him to make that that transition mentally.
Right. And you kind of look at the receivers they've drafted over the years. And to be honest, I feel like they've done a better job of finding guys with the right mentality than not. I mean, you think about Jermaine Kearse. You think about, I mean, yes, it took Golden Tate a couple years to figure it out, but he eventually did. And I know you're saying it impact immediately, but I mean, he was still a receiver that was worth the draft pick. I think we can both agree on that.
Sure.
Tyler Lockett comes in and produces immediately. DK comes in and produces immediately. I think Paul Richardson had a chance to do that if it weren't for the fact that his body just failed him.
Right.
I mean, he had the ability. So they have a pretty good track record of doing that. Now, have they had their misses? Of course. I mean, for every DK, there's an Amara Darbo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a bit hit or miss, but I do believe in their ability to find guys in the draft to address the wide receiver position a little bit more. Although on the list of needs and wants, definitely falls into a want. And at the end of the day, too, if I'm looking at needs and wants, is offense really the problem for this team or is defense really the problem for this team? And to me, it's very clear that defensively is where we need to put more resources to make this team competitive.
Yeah, offensive line, especially, you can say that protecting Russell Wilson is a need. And I think that would be fine to say that. But when you look at the way that they've operated in the past, do they need to spend big money protecting Russell Wilson? That answer, I think, is no, because we've seen guys come in like Mike Iupati and DJ Fluker and, you know, on not minimum deals, but, you know, long term veteran, you know, in that $2 to $5 million range for 1 year or 2 years. And they've been able to get by like that. So a guy like Brian Bulaga is probably going to be up over $10 million. Re-signing Ifedi is probably going to be that amount. Jermaine Ifedi, he might come in under 10, but he said he wants to play left tackle, and we'll see how.
Ifedi wants to play left tackle?
Fant wants to play left tackle.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. Because Ifedi can barely play right tackle. He needs to slow his roll.
Yeah.
if that's the case.
No, Fant has said that he wants to play left tackle, but.
Okay. And then also with that, when he's good enough to make demands about where he's going to play, then get back to me. Until then, you play where you're put.
I did see, though, I think it was John Gilbert of Field Goals posting on Twitter the list of players who have had more than 250 snaps. Who have also had a PFF score above 60. And the list was one name long among free agents for 2020. And that one name was George Fant.
Yeah, that sounds like a few too many qualifiers to get to that point.
I don't think so. 250 snaps at left tackle above replacement level grade. That's
all
like
right.
Two qualifiers.
Okay, cool. There's that very arbitrary. Like, why 250 snaps? Why?
Yeah, probably because there was a guy at 212. I don't know.
Right, exactly. Whatever. That means nothing to me. That's one of those 50% of all statistics are misleading statistics.
Why did the governor of Washington decide that the cap on events to have group gatherings is 250? I don't know. That's just a round number.
Sure. I mean, that and what is it that the native tribes and like the Amish and things like that, where they spin off communities, like when they get to a certain number of people, like, because it turns into like kind of a disharmonious situation.
Oh yeah.
Like, what is that number? Is it 250?
I think it is in the 200s. Maybe it's a magical number for groups.
Okay. That's all I'm getting at. There might be a method of the madness. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, moving on.
Yeah. But as far as, you know, taking resources and tossing it at the offensive line, I wouldn't hate it. That's one of those where it's kind of a, I think need want kind of fit hand in hand to a degree. Yeah, it's difficult for me to get upset about the idea of committing to spending money in the trenches, because then at that point, it doesn't much matter who you throw back there at running back. You could go through six guys in a season and it wouldn't matter if your offensive line is full of a bunch of road graders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm fine with that.
Like I said, protecting Russell Wilson is a need that has to be done.
Sure. To a degree. But we're fortunate in the fact that we have a quarterback that isn't a statue quarterback. In a third of the offense that is maybe the most effective third of our offense is the scribble play.
Great.
And so if you start protecting him more, you get less scribble play. And that could be, you know, a little bit of, yin and yang there that you got to kind of balance.
Well, I guess while we're on the offense, it does feel like tight end is an area that has been addressed. So I don't think, you know, having a third tight end, bringing in Luke Wilson, like it sounded like Pete Carroll and John Schneider were open to doing. I mean, we're talking third tight end there. It's kind of like the third wide receiver position for me. It's pretty low, definitely falls in the want category. In terms of running back, you know, that's something that it probably falls in the want category too, because you do have guys coming back next year. You do have some injury concerns, but that's something that can be addressed either through the draft or toward the tail end of free agency. It's not something you're going to go out and address right away in free agency.
There's a million third tier free agent running backs out there that can come in and do just fine for you.
It's like when we watched the AAF last year and watching the XFL. Turns out those teams do pretty well with their running game. They can find guys to carry the ball pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Turns out.
Well, moving over to the defense.
Okay.
Rushing the quarterback.
All right.
This is a need. And it's probably, I would put this at the top. I think by this point, Seahawks fans are tired of hearing about just how much of a need this is, because it has been harped on almost through the entire season last year and now into the offseason and going into the free agency. So this is the area to address.
Well, and I I know it's been talked about, but this would be the piece that puts this team together.
Yeah.
Because the symbiotic relationship between the secondary and the pass rush is a huge deal. And I know a lot of people have talked about corner and safety as places to look at. Look, we got plenty of dudes at safety, plenty of dudes. There's no reason to go out and spend hardly anything resource-wise on safety for this upcoming season. It's ridiculous. McDougald and Diggs are a good tandem, and if one of them goes down or takes a step back or whatever it is, you drafted Blair High for a reason, okay? There's plenty of depth there. So I don't see any reason to spend money there. And then you talk about the corners. You know, Griffin had a great year last year, and I totally expect Flowers to come back and have a good third year and get over that sophomore slump. And then you look at Amadi, and he did great in the slot. I mean, you got three guys right there. You can find one more. I mean, they do
great
it all
is
the
pretty
time.
Strong, but yeah, he was, you know, you expect him to be an upcoming player for 2020.
Yeah, I like what I saw at Amadi. I really do.
And again, you're going back to you draft guys for a reason, and you allow them to come up and have two or three years before you say, or I mean, enough time that it takes to say I'm ready to move on, which should have been a year early for a guy like Tedrick Thompson. But you know, that's you need to give him a chance.
Of course, but there's enough talent there in the back end that if you have a competent pass rush, we're not asking them to cover 5-6 seconds, which newsflash, nobody can. Like, that's just too long. I don't care what secondary you are. I don't care if it was LOB guys in their heyday. Like, they're not going to cover for 5-6-7 seconds. You just can't do it. If you do, it's a fluke almost. So yes, pass rush is by far the key that could unlock this season. And so obviously that brings us to Clowney.
Uh-huh.
And then the discussion around Ngakoue. And it's like, well, I don't know why Yannick is the guy that everybody looks at and they're like, well, that's the guy the Seahawks will target, and that's the only guy we're gonna talk about, and there's really no other options. It's him or Clowney, and that's that. I'm very confused by that conversation.
Yeah, especially when they're different types of players. I mean, Clowney is a guy who can rush the passer. He's strong against the run. I feel like he's the more complete player between the two guys. So when you're talking about the idea of allowing Clowney to go off and join a team like the Giants or the Colts, which, you know, aren't Super Bowl caliber teams. He said at the end of the season, he wants to play for a team that's going to go to the Super Bowl. He doesn't want to mess around playing for a team, you know, 16 games for a team that's going to end up going nowhere at the end of the season. So those kind of reports seem like plays to try and maybe up the Seahawks price a little bit, which we heard from news reports that they're looking, you know, coming out of the combine of doing an $18 to $20 million deal for Clowney. And that's nice, but you know, they're probably going to have to come up from that. That's just where, you know, they negotiate with agents at the combine. Everybody's there. And that's where they try and get an idea of what agents can get for their clients. So that's probably going to be higher from that. We hear that the Giants might be interested at $23 million. And yeah, that might be the case, but the Giants fall into that category of a team that's not going to be competitive for a Super Bowl. So that is, I see that. And it's merely a play, I think, to get a little more money out of the Seahawks and trying to get up. I think what we'll see is you average those two numbers together, $21.5 million, and that's what Clowney stays in Seattle for.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up 21.5, because I guess in my head I keep looking back and I'd be like, 21 seems about right.
Sure.
You know, hey, we'll pay you what you're worth, and you're worth every penny of that. But, I mean, if we're going to actually be competitive for a Super Bowl, I mean, we've got to save a couple bucks here, man. Yeah. And he does seem to like the culture. He does seem to like Pete Carroll. He does seem to like his fellow players. And people talk about injury concerns with him. Well, I mean, yes, he did get injured last year, but he was a warrior, man. He played through that crap. That's all I needed to see right there. He missed a couple games, but he was there for the big moments and played well. And that's all you can ask out of a dude. If at all possible, he'll strap it up and give it to you. And that actually sounded way worse than it should have. But... but the point being is I think Clowney is worth every penny. He is the Michael Bennett type player for this defense and that defensive line, who is versatile enough and has what Chris Sims calls the catfish, the play up ability. Like that is who Clowney is. So I believe you sign him, and then you look at second tier defensive ends like Cliff Averill was thought as being back in the day when they brought him in to be the complimentary pass rusher to Michael Bennett. And there are guys out there who I believe fit that mold that you don't have to trade for, like Ngakoue, and give up like a second. You could actually, you know, bring him in for $8, $9, $10 million rather than top tier money and giving up draft picks. And I mean, Robert Quinn is one of those guys that I look at and sure. think of in that mold. There's a bunch of different dudes. So, and with a deep edge rushing free agency class, I don't understand, again, the media's framing this of, well, it's either Clowney or Ngakoue, and that's it, and good luck, Seattle. There's a lot of options.
I do think the Ngakoue thing, it's one that I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around, the Seahawks being interested in him rather than Clowney, because if Clowney does go, I just don't understand. You're going to have to pay Ngakoue upwards of that $21, $21.5 million amount anyway. He's going to get that Frank Clark type of salary that he got from the Chiefs last year. So you're going to pay that in addition to losing Clowney and then giving up one of the draft picks that you potentially got from Clark leaving anyway. Why didn't you just keep Frank Clark, who you knew fit with the style of your team, and now you're bringing in a guy that you have absolutely no information on, and you're going to pay him that same type of contract? It doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense. And you know Clowney fits what you like to do. You know he fits in with the team. You know he can play at a high level in your scheme. And, I mean, holy cow, there are other edge rushers for days to roll the dice on to see if there's anything left in the tank. Guys like Bruce Irvin, Vic Beasley. I mean, some of these guys that, you know, have high pedigrees that maybe it didn't just pan out for them at different stops, but they could come in and they could pop for you. And, or guys, like I said, I think Robert Quinn is like the perfect guy for this. Like, yeah, that's the guy I look at and I'm like, he produces everywhere he goes, but he's not a name for some reason.
Yeah.
And I just think you could get him for a song. And now you got that 1-2 punch. And then maybe LJ Collier comes on as next year.
Or Rasheem Green.
Yeah, exactly.
They have depth, and maybe you can bring back a guy like Quentin Jefferson too. And that's, he doesn't fall into that edge role specifically, but you know, if you're talking about a group of guys who can be all complementary and rotational pass rushers, then I think he would fit into that group as well. And I think it sounds like you and me both kind of agree the idea that Jaron Reed is not one that you absolutely need to bring back next year, because he falls into that category of guys that the Seahawks have gone out. And if you're looking specifically for a player who can sometimes rush the passer, but is really good at stopping the run, those guys are generally available.
They are, for a lot less than what Jaron Reed has said that he wants. I mean, it's been made clear by Reed's camp that the priority for him in this contract, and look, and bless his heart for it, I get it.
Oh yeah, I would want a long-term, high-paying deal too. Just like
he wants the bag, man. He wants them to back up the truck, or at least one of the teams to back up the truck and dump money in his front lawn. All right, if that's your priority, your skill set to me isn't worth taking that risk.
Mm-hmm.
I think those resources could be better spent by plugging the gap with guys like Sue or McCoy, or there's a bunch of veteran D tackles that still get the job done. And again, you could bring in on a one-year deal. I mean, Sue's a mercenary, man. He loves playing these one-year deals. I think Gerald McCoy would fit in that as well. I mean, Leonard Williams just got in trouble for bringing guns to an airport. Maybe that's a guy you target, because that was poor choice of words there too. But maybe that's a guy that now you can get on the cheap because of the potential legal problems, and you ride it out like you did with Kendricks. There's all sorts of options.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of guys that had down years last year, maybe Ons is a guy that you can bring back for a relatively low salary.
No.
And, I know you don't, you aren't excited about that, but no. Depending on the price.
No. Well, I mean, if he's going to give money back.
I'm not talking about giving money back, but you gave Deion Jordan a couple of years to try and work it out here in Seattle.
He was young.
Yeah, I guess Anza's 31 now.
Yeah. He's done, dude. It's over.
You know, you think Deion Jordan was over 30 when he was working through that in Seattle?
Well, I'm going to go with no, since he's 30 right now.
Okay. But a lot of different options. Yeah, Bruce Irvin sounds like he'd be open to coming back to Seattle. Hey, Michael Bennett said this past week that he's looking at potentially coming back to Seattle.
All right. So there is a want for me to bring back the all nostalgia team. Like, go out and bring back Bennett, bring back Irvin.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, see if Sherm becomes a cap casualty and then bring him back. I'm sure Golden Tate's floating around out there somewhere. Jermaine Kearse is still floating around out there somewhere.
Yeah, Jermaine Kearse recovering from injury after last year. Yeah, he could come back.
Yeah, exactly. And just put the band back together again. You know, Okun just got traded. Maybe you see if you can trade for him again. It'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I don't think it gets you anywhere.
Right.
But
I think there are guys that can be complementary pieces, though, coming back at this stage in their career, though, because they've had their time where they were the guys on Seattle, and now they're, you know, a lot like Chris Clemens coming back at a late stage in his career to try and make one more go of it. And yeah, the Seahawks, they've made it known that, you know, if it isn't going to work, they're going to move on from you. Mm-hmm. If they think that there's other guys that are coming up that you're keeping them from being successful.
I just think this is the position group, the defensive line as a whole, where there is a plethora of free agents available. It is the one that needs the most time and attention spent to. And we look at all the names that are currently available. The other thing to kind of keep in mind is John Schneider's propensity to pull off big deals with other teams for players that you never thought were available in any way, shape, or form.
Sure.
And so that allows you to dream, you know, of have like a Von Miller dream one night or something like that.
You poo-pooed on my Von Miller dream last time we talked.
Yeah, because it's not going to happen. But I, you know, it's fun to think about. But there's always that possibility as well.
Yeah.
And if you do feel like this is an all-in year for the next 2 years, then maybe you do that. Maybe you mortgage the future a little bit to go out and pull off some sort of big time deal.
Yeah. And I think they are in that position now with draft picks that they could give up some of those picks to make things happen. We know they're going to trade down from that number 27 overall pick and gather more picks anyway. So does that make it expendable to trade one of their two picks at the end of the second round, the 59 overall, 64 overall? They got some comp picks added this last week. They got the number 101 overall in round three. They got 144 in round four, and then in round six, they got 214. So that helps round out that group of eight picks. I was interested to see where they were going to fall in the fifth round because there were so many different moving parts with trading for Quandre Diggs and trading away Nick Vinette, number 162 overall that we got from Pittsburgh. So, yeah, eight picks overall and three picks in the top 65 and four picks in the top 101. So It's a much better start this year.
Yeah, I guess that's how that worked out. There's a part of me that feels like the formula for compensatory picks is more complicated than, say, like, I don't know, quantum theory. Like, it really, like, who the hell knows?
They got a third round pick for Earl Thomas leaving. They got the fourth round comp for Justin Coleman leaving.
Right.
And then the sixth was either Sweezy or Shamar Stephen.
Yeah, and somehow the Patriots ended up with the most compensatory picks of anybody, and it seems like they just added people all year long.
Yeah, well, there is a trick to it. It's like picking up. It's why the Seahawks went after a guy like Greg Olsen, I think, who doesn't count toward the comp pick formula versus a guy like Austin Hooper, who is going to be available, and he's going to count against you if somebody leaves.
Well, I mean, that might be one of the reasons that they did that. The other might be that Greg Olsen is a markedly better player than Austin Hooper ever dreams of being.
Sure. Well, that's but in terms of a long-term option, I think Hooper is probably a team that's looking for a more long-term younger player who would look toward Hooper.
Hey, man, if you want to overpay for underneath mediocre production, have at it, man. Like, that's cool. I love underachieving, overpaid guys, especially when they're young. That it's really cool. It's a great way to build a team.
That's what Austin free Hooper agency would be my number is one all target. About, Adam. Let's not pretend that that's why guys like
hit
Clowney.
Free agency?
That's why guys like Clowney don't hit free agency. It's because they're generally good enough to get what they're asking for from the team that they're currently with.
Is there any way you think that Clowney signs before free agency begins?
I could see it happening on Friday.
Really?
Yeah. If he's going to...
Why? Why would you if you could at least, you know, put your finger in the air and kind of see what other numbers get thrown at you?
You don't think that that's already happened?
Well, it's not supposed to have happened.
Yeah, but you don't think that that's already happened?
Okay, fine. Fine. Don't bother me with your facts, logic, and reason, Brandon.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. No, that's fair.
That's why I think it could happen Friday.
Okay.
It wouldn't surprise me if they wait until Monday and just to see if people go crazy.
Yeah, you never know.
And it really does depend on whether or not the problem with the situation of his wants and needs mm-hmm. is if he wants to go to a Super Bowl contending team, usually the teams with the most salary cap money aren't Super Bowl contending teams.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, right? With the parity and everything.
Yeah. I feel like that's what puts Seattle in a pretty good position. But I guess the good thing about free agency is that if he does go, there are other options. I mean, you talked about this being a pretty deep defensive end type class. You have guys like, I don't even think we've talked about, you know, Mario Addison for Carolina, for example. He's going to be out there.
Three-fingered Jason.
Jason Pierre-Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he out there? Oh, yeah.
He is.
Yeah. He's down. Yeah. See, he's so far down the list. It's
what's one of those guys? Like, this feels like one of those classes where at the end of the day, a team ends up picking up a guy who still has a lot in the tank for not very much. And everybody goes, how the hell did they pull that off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A guy like Vinnie Curry or mm-hmm. guys that are just in their early 30s and they still have something left to give.
Talking about guys who still have something left to give, I've seen a lot of conversation swirling around Justin Braid.
What is this disturbing you?
Yes, because it's stupid.
It's not stupid to suggest that a guy coming off of an ACL injury might not be the same player.
Which is basically like stubbing a toe anymore, an ACL, like the surgeries have gotten so good.
Yeah, I suppose it's not like an Achilles like Sherman dealt with, huh?
And he's still relatively young. I mean, and he's the leader of that offensive line. He brings the nasty. Him and Russ, you know, are on the same page. He epitomizes everything that it is to be a Seahawk. Like, he's one of those team leader kind of guys. He's worth every penny. Like, that's a position you can pay kind of top of that position and it not be that much ultimately compared to, say, like, receiver, corner, safety, quarterback.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
And they don't need cap money at this point.
Right.
Like, they have that. They have $53 million under the cap right now. The salary cap went up to about $200 million, depending on what the CBA does in this next week. Who knows? That cap number could go crazy because the rosters are going to have to expand based on the new collective bargaining agreement. So they have a $10 million rollover from 2019. So that's putting them about $53 million under the cap right now, which, as we all know, with the whole cap magic, how it doesn't exist anyway, that's plenty of money to be under the cap and sign a lot of different guys.
Yeah, and it's tough to know where you're going to be just money-wise. I mean, you say $53 million, but the CBA is fascinating, right? I mean, is that going to be ratified by the time free agent starts, and how is that going to affect the market?
Well, they are going to know by Monday.
For sure?
The vote, the deadline to vote is Monday or this weekend.
Oh, you think they don't move deadlines on things like this?
Well, they already moved it once.
Oh, okay. So it's possible that it might not happen.
Well, they could even move the free agency deadline if they wanted to.
You don't think that discussion's already been had, Brandon? The possibility of moving the deadline again?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, they moved the tagging deadline back.
That was fun to switch that around back on you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I deserve that.
Yeah. Deserved it. No, it was just fun. But yeah, that's a huge thing. I mean, because that could affect salary cap to a large degree. And yeah, who the hell knows? And we've said it year after year when we try to do these free agent podcasts. The salary cap is magic.
It's magic.
And John Schneider is Houdini.
And he's done this long enough to know that, yeah, there's just...
How the magic tricks work?
We don't know how the magic tricks work, but we know that they are magic tricks that do work.
Exactly. Something like that.
I don't know how John Schneider does his magic, Adam.
Well, it's clearly voodoo.
I just know that they don't seem to get penalized for any kind of cap issues.
No, that's true. Yeah, they don't end up like the Saints in salary cap hell. I mean, I guess when they were shedding all of the LOB contracts, I mean, that's probably about as bad as it ever got.
That was as close as they got, but they...
It was tough to see that entire squad, like, you know, just break down all at once in their early 30s.
Yeah.
You expected maybe one of them, but all three of them, bodies blew up.
I do wonder if Cam would have stayed healthy. Do they try and make that? Do they try and keep it together a little bit longer?
I think they would have with Earl. I think they would have moved on from Sherm one way or the other.
Yeah.
Just in terms of leaders on the team, and they really wanted Russ to be able to kind of take that over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Cam and Russ were, you know, kind of similar personalities in a way.
Sure.
So that could have worked, but.
Yeah, and Earl's a quiet guy. He could have dealt with anything.
Yeah, more or less. I do have a serious question, though, because this is concerning me. I was just reading this headline.
Okay.
Russell Wilson has a new QB coach.
A new QB coach. Dave Canales, as we've talked about. No, he got promoted to the passing game coordinator.
Right.
Which means he's going to be coordinating the passing game now.
Well, cool. He can draw scribbles on a page as good as anybody, I guess. But Austin Davis is now the quarterback's coach, the guy who backed up Russell Wilson. Like, what is he supposed to tell Russ? Well, I couldn't beat you out and do anything because I wasn't good enough. Here, let me coach you now.
Yeah, he was Wilson's backup in 2017.
I don't know, man.
He's 6 months younger than Russell Wilson, so he doesn't even have that wise old veteran presence to him.
Right. So is he just going to be, I don't know, coaching PJ Walker and whoever else they bring in to be the backup?
Who are you going to get to coach Russell Wilson anyway at this point?
Oh, hell, there's guys that have been around the league for long enough to where you'd be like, oh, he might have some insight for him.
But
Austin Davis isn't one of them. I can say that with some certainty.
This is Brian Schottenheimer giving up and saying, I can't coach Russell. I need to find another guy to do it.
No, this is Brian Schottenheimer owing Austin Davis a favor. Maybe he lost a bet in a round of golf or something and just being like, oh, well, fine. You can be Russ's QB coach because it doesn't matter. He's awesome. So you don't need to do anything.
If there's one thing that I've come to realize, though, in the NFL, it's that you find these guys who were mediocre quarterbacks that struggled to hang on as a backup quarterback that end up being pretty good coaches. And look at Doug Peterson. Look at Frank Reich for the Indianapolis Colts. Look at Jason Garrett for the Cowboys.
That's a helping argument.
No, I should have started with Jason Garrett and then gone to Peterson and then gone to Frank Reich.
No, just gloss straight over Jason Garrett.
I'm going to, I'll make an edit point here and we'll take out Jason Garrett's name.
There we go. But, you know, I mean, the genius Sean McVay, the genius Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, all these guys were former mediocre quarterbacks that didn't either even make it to the NFL.
Didn't make it to the NFL.
Yeah. You know, flamed out spectacularly by the time they got there.
I thought McVay was a receiver.
He was a quarterback, bro.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who else? There's probably other guys that we're even forgetting. I mean, shoot. Mike Holmgren, he was a mediocre quarterback that couldn't succeed in college.
True. I mean, Steve Spurrier, I mean, he didn't really succeed in the NFL, but he was a hell of a college coach. So, the landscape is littered with former mediocre quarterbacks who made decent coaches.
Austin Davis is the next Mike Holmgren. You heard it here first.
Wow. Okay. I mean, it's so absurd, I can't even argue against it because there's not enough evidence to say anything one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think of the new passing game coordinator?
You know, I have an affinity for guys named Dave. They tend to be good people.
Mm-hmm.
And he did such a good job coaching Russell Wilson as a quarterback, you know, to nearly an MVP year, that he must be a genius. So he can be the passing game coordinator.
Yeah. You can't let him go. You have to promote him to what sounds like a made up position of passing game coordinator.
Yeah. I mean, look, like I said, he can get out a notepad and, you know, grab a pen and close his eyes and just start drawing figure eights like anybody else. I mean,
I feel like Schottenheimer's gotten that tone back a little bit. Dialed back.
Because the last 2 years he's gotten a little better protection than he's had previously in his career.
And now he's losing Jermaine Ifedi.
Oh no. Oh my stars. Whatever are we going to do? I don't know how we would ever find just a league average replacement player to play right tackle in this league. How would we ever do it, Brandon? How?
Yeah, it almost doesn't seem possible, but the Seahawks will find a way.
I mean, there's got to be some traffic cones left over from like quarantining off the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's got to be a couple that we could just put out there at right tackle and call it good. I mean, and the best part about a traffic cone is it wouldn't false catfishing start.
It stays in place.
Yeah.
Well, I saw Dave Bloomquist out there on Twitter, who is really excited about the idea of Detroit Lions right guard Graham Glasgow not coming back to Detroit and going to be on the market.
Okay. I will, since Dave is excited, I'll be excited because I know all of two things about Graham Glasgow.
Mm-hmm.
And one is that his first name is Graham, and the second is that his last name is Glasgow.
I think Dave probably doesn't know much about Glasgow either, but just going off the strength of his mustache is like, this is a guy that he looks like a Seahawks offensive lineman. Like from the Mike Holmgren era. Just pull up a picture of him. He looks like a dude who would have played guard for Mike Holmgren.
See, it's tough because the line between molestache and good mustache is really hard
he does walk that line.
I mean, there's only so many Tom Selleck's in the world, you know?
Uh-huh.
All right, Graham Glasgow, here he is. Oh, no.
You're not into the stash?
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, he can actually pull it off. I changed my mind. I had to look at a couple more pictures. Yeah, that's a dude that I would see roll out of an F-350 in Casper, Wyoming, with a gun rack in the back and, you know, mud up and down his jeans and spitting a little tobacco out of his mouth and, you know, probably put up about 30 miles of fence that morning. And yeah, was adept to wear the mustache.
Yeah. If you bring this guy in, you can't get rid of Justin Britt, though. Those guys would be like best buddies, I think.
Oh my God. Yeah. Can we get rid of Techno Thursdays and make them Redneck Thursdays then?
If Graham Glasgow is on the Seahawks, there will be no Techno Thursdays. This is a guy that's going to show some leadership in the locker room and make sure that doesn't happen.
He'll nip short shorts in the catfish, bud. I know that.
Luke Wilson not coming back if Graham Glasgow's on the team.
No, because he's afraid of his mustache. Okay, I'm all in on Glasgow now.
With some guys on the defensive line that I saw an article out there where Jim Moore of 710 ESPN was saying that the Seahawks, the headline of the article, the Seahawks will be better served by signing Armstead over Clowney.
Okay.
Going with Eric Armstead from the San Francisco 49ers.
Right.
Rather than re-signing Jadeveon Clowney.
Right. So you're better off signing a third fiddle instead of a first fiddle?
That was my takeaway from the argument, because you have a dude like Armstead who, what success did he have prior to Joey Bosa.
He's going to have to give half of his next contract to Joey Bosa.
He should. Right? He owes him.
Yeah, the Bosa brothers, they've made him a little richer. There's no doubt.
So, yeah, the third best guy, arguably, maybe the fourth, on the 49ers defensive line would be the better guy to bring in and pay He's gonna be asking for upwards of $20 million, I bet.
I've been out on Armstead since the second the Niners drafted him. He does not have the body type to be a good freaking defensive lineman. He's too lean and too tall.
Yeah.
That rarely works.
And it worked pretty well when he had a lot of different guys around him.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, that seems like a mistake to me.
Yeah.
And Ndamukong Suh, could he be back in the Pacific Northwest, Portland native?
Yeah.
Do you want it, though?
I mean, I wouldn't hate it.
I don't know. Hey, I'm out on Suh.
That's fine. I don't have like a strong argument other than I think he can play. I don't particularly care for the man and his personality.
He just doesn't seem like an all out effort type of guy every single play.
No, and that's why he's had a longer career. I mean, he's doing the Revis playbook and keep getting them checks, Suh. I'm not mad.
Yeah, from teams that aren't making the playoffs, too. So, I mean, that just tells me something.
Well, I mean, he made the playoffs with the Rams 2 years ago. He just happened to end up with the Bucks. And look, you can't fault him for the fact that his quarterback can't see and needed to go and get corrective eye surgery.
That's true. Yeah, maybe the Bucks will be better next year.
Well, yeah, because they'll have literally anybody but Jameis as quarterback.
Where do you think Jameis goes?
The Chargers, man.
Okay.
That is the most Chargers signing ever.
That makes sense.
He's a name. Nobody wants to go there. And yeah, Bruce Arians is going to put up with that. I heard somebody float out the Raiders the other day. And it's like, those turnovers would... I'm pretty sure John Gruden's head would literally explode.
He would murder. He would literally murder Jameis Winston before the end of the season.
Can you imagine when he throws his second pick with like 10 minutes left in the second quarter of week 3, John Gruden just taking the pen out from behind his ear, running out on the field and stabbing him like directly in the neck.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's what Chucky would do.
Yes.
Gerald McCoy and Everson Griffin are probably the two guys on the defensive line that I'm interested in. And the thing that worries me about McCoy is that he showed absolutely no interest in coming into Seattle as a free agent. Now, he went to Carolina and he wanted to stay down south.
That might be his jam. I mean, if it is, then that is a personality defect that actually makes it so that I don't want him on the team.
Right.
Yeah. If you really want to stay in the south and somebody like offers you the Pacific Northwest, you're like, nah, I'm good with gators and pythons and brain-eating amoebas.
And humidity.
Good to go. And humidity.
Yeah. Some people just don't adjust well to the Pacific Northwest weather, and that's understandable, too.
Actually, serious question. Does the coronavirus hurt the Seahawks in free agency because of Seattle being a hotspot?
Huh. I didn't think about that until just now when you posed the question.
Yeah. Well, me neither, because I just came up with the question.
I would think that by the time, people.
That's the thing. It's hard telling, not knowing how long this thing is going to kind of play out. Like, if it just goes away in a couple months, like if we kind of get it under control and
is
all
the
that.
Player, is the player married and has kids? Then maybe the answer is yes.
Maybe. I don't know.
This topic is depressing me. I feel like we need to move on.
Okay, that's fine. It was something I thought about, and maybe other people have thoughts about it. I don't know. It's just something to keep in mind.
I will keep it in mind. That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to potential draft information, because the combine did happen. I feel like the mock drafts, Adam, are starting to ramp up. And we do have some members of the flock who went to getintheflock.com. They're part of our Ring of Honor Facebook group. David Blevins is one of those gentlemen who came in with a question and says, if Clowney and Reed both walk, do the Hawks maybe try and move up in the draft to get the kid out of Penn State? A lot of people mocking Ytor Gross-Matos out of Penn State to the Seahawks at the end of the first round, but he could go a little bit earlier. If they're in that much of a need for pass rush, do they actually trade up in the draft to get him?
Why would you mock the Seahawks for getting that guy?
Mock draft.
Mock what?
Don't tell me you have not seen mock draft. You haven't seen mock draft 11.0 by so-and-so from CBS Sports.
Yeah. Okay. That was the one time we get to bring up mock drafts on the show when I'm on. You can bring it up with, you know, the other nerds if you want, but we're not talking anything about what player has been mocked to the Seahawks.
Uh-huh.
It's stupid.
Okay.
Yeah. So to answer David's question, I mean, not because he brought up mock stuff and he's not stupid, but to answer his question, I don't know. Maybe he might. They might trade up. My gut says that they won't. I mean, that's not their MO. I mean, they did trade up for Earl, right? Or did they stay in their spot for
Earl? No, they actually did. They trade.
It's one of the two.
They stayed in their spot. No, I think they stayed in their spot for both of them because the number 6 overall was their pick that year. And then the 15 overall was the one that they got in the trade with Denver from the year before.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
I don't think they did any trading. I think the one trade they did, Irvin, they traded back for. I don't think they've traded up in round one.
So I would say it's highly unlikely.
It is unlikely.
But then again, you know, I mean, John likes to zig when we all think he's going to zag.
It seems to me that when you're drafting at the end of the first round, that the way they grade players, you're talking about second round graded players. And by that time, there's probably lots of second round graded players that you have, which is why they move back and they take one of their other second round graded players.
Right. And you've heard John Schneider talk about it a million times, the way that he views the draft. He views the draft in tiers,
mm-hmm.
not rounds. And the difference being is, well, just because he's the, you know, 30th pick, he was a first rounder. That's amazing. No. He's like, you know, maybe the top 12 players in the draft are like tier 1, 13 through, you know, 50 are all fairly comparable depending on their position, right?
You could be in your fourth, depending on how he does his tiers, they could be in the fourth tier by the time they get to at the end of round one.
Oh, wow. You think he has like, what, 63 tiers of guys?
I don't know about 63. I'm just saying there might be, if you have like an elite home run type prospect, you know, maybe there's 3 of those guys. And I'm just saying you don't, there's no cap or limit to where the how the tiers work out.
I want there to be a tier limit. This has to be renegotiated.
No,
in this,
there
this
are CDK. No tier limits.
I can't have just tiers running willy nilly everywhere. Like just who knows how many tiers. No, you're right. There's probably as many tiers as you want, depending on the actual draft. That makes sense. God, you've been really smart this podcast.
Look, when you and I have a 2-week break, you know, I have to dial in. It just dials me in when you and I are talking now. But you know, you brought up the COVID-19 thing too. So you know, we're just both on our game today.
Oh yeah. Well, and really,
so
I brought
a huge congrats to us.
Yeah, I think we're amazing, and the first half of the show has been amazing. And I can't wait for the gold that we spin here in the second half of the show.
Let's do it. Getting into the second half of the show. And Adam, how's things going in your bunker? Have you counted up all of your rolls of hoarded toilet paper and put them neatly in a corner yet?
No, I mean, I have 28. But yeah, I mean, you don't need a crazy amount, right? But like, if they tell you to stay home for 2 to 4 weeks, like, you know, if I have to go to the bathroom, I'd like to be able to clean myself up. Well, that doesn't seem crazy.
No. And that's a pretty, I think, reasonable amount to have on hand.
Yeah. I didn't need to go out and, you know, buy 17 years worth of toilet paper.
It doesn't go bad, though. 17 years, you're covered.
It'd be good. And like pile it up in my living room and do swan dives into it. Like, you know, Scrooge McDuck in his vault with all of his gold coins.
You could make a pretty decent couch out of if you went to Costco. And mm-hmm. got like, I don't know, 8
toilet
or 10 of them.
Yeah.
Toilet paper and duct tape. And that can be your couch.
I think that would definitely be the way to go. I mean, maybe that's what people were doing. And everybody was making fun of these hoarders is like they were making toilet paper couches.
You don't know.
You don't know.
You give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. You Netflix and chill on a pile of Charmin and tell me it's a bad time.
XFL making some news this last week, though. The Seattle Dragons are set to play in front of an empty stadium with the governor of Washington limiting group sizes to 250 people.
Yeah, and I also just saw a headline that all the March Madness games, no audience.
All of them?
All of them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I do have to say, though, I am team humanity on this issue.
Yeah?
Like, I want people to live.
This isn't political for you?
I mean, is that a political stance?
You don't think that the Democrats spawned a brand new virus and unleashed it in China to somehow get over to America and infect everybody to make the stock market tank, to make Trump look bad right before the election? How do you not believe that, Brandon? How?
I mean, I will read that and subscribe to the newsletter just because I do find conspiracy theories entertaining. But, you know.
But yeah, I mean, like, I think we're all on team. Let's make sure that, you know, as few people die of this as possible. And I mean, yeah, let's be real. Like, one of the things like I got to take into consideration is that every one of my neighbors is either over 60 mm-hmm. or has massive health problems like that and are close to 60.
Sure.
So, you know, me bringing that home.
And you travel a lot.
And I travel a lot. I'm supposed to go to the Seattle area in 3 weeks. We'll see if that happens. I don't know. But yeah, you just you try to, I think these measures to protect the people who are vulnerable are, you know, they're prudent. I think it's a good idea.
I know a lot of people compare it to the actual flu, but I mean, this is something new. I mean, with the actual flu, we have vaccines that mm-hmm. people can go and get every year or, you know, whenever they need a shot for it. And so when there is something new, it's, you know, going to the science part of it, people don't have a natural immunity built up among the population with regard to whatever's going around now.
Right. And I mean, this is a very simple thing to wrap your head around. I mean, if you're out there being like, well, this is the flu is worse. Well, dude, you're not really using your noodle because if you just look at the response of, say, I don't know, the world, that this is a little more serious than the flu. It's not the end of the world. Like, this isn't the movie Outbreak. I'm not, you know, betting on the fact that I need Dustin Hoffman to go out and find a catfish monkey to make a serum so that we all don't die. And Donald Sutherland's about to blow up a town on the California coast. That's not happening. But it's also not the flu.
I'm glad we don't have Donald Sutherland as our president right now.
Yeah.
He's been very ineffective in the president role in all the movies where he's been president.
Yeah, it hasn't been a shining moment for him, that's for sure. No, but they keep throwing him in there because the voice is majestic.
He does have a majestic voice. You know, I do have a solution for this problem, though.
Donald Sutherland or the coronavirus?
more the coronavirus. And this is maybe a solution.
Does it involve Donald Sutherland?
Is he a Rams fan or a 49ers fan? If so, then yes.
Oh, okay.
You just have to act as if your hands have touched some LA Rams clothing or maybe a 49ers jersey, if that helps. Because if you imagine your hands, you know, constantly touching those types of clothing items, you treat them as if, you know, if you stick it in your eye or toward your face, it'll burn. And mm-hmm. and it reminds you to wash your hands frequently.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah.
That's a good theory by you.
Life tip.
Does the Rams new logo make your eyes burn?
I don't know what they were thinking with that Rams logo.
Was there any thinking?
No, probably not.
They're like, I got an idea. Let's put a giant LA on there, take the Chargers logo and bend it into a Rams horn.
Yeah.
And then
we'll use a yellow outline on a blue hat so that the colors make it look like it's not even close to LA Rams colors.
Well, they're changing the colors.
Yeah, but not to green.
Well, okay.
The LA, because of it, it's a blue hat.
Over top of the blue is what you're saying. Because, like, you know, if you have the blue toilet tabs that you put in the toilet and then you pee in there, it turns green.
Right.
Same effect.
Rams
logo is the same as peeing into a toilet with the blue flushy tabs.
Exactly.
I agree, by the way.
I mean, it's science.
Color theory.
Yeah, exactly. Well, on another XFL topic, the Seahawks were at the last Dragons game and scouting PJ Walker.
So I do find this interesting in the sense of if you're PJ Walker, and of course, when you started playing in the XFL, you were just hoping to get another shot back into the NFL, right?
I would think so.
But to become the clear-cut star of a whole league, like if the XFL can come back to you the next season and offer you comparable money as a backup quarterback, what do you do?
I am curious to know what the XFL would do moving forward with that regard, because the way the pay is structured right now, each team has one player that they can pay $600,000 to, or $60,000 per game.
Okay.
If you're PJ Walker, and they aren't offering any more, and I can go make, because if the CBA kicks in for the minimum player, isn't it above $600,000 then?
I have no idea.
I know it's an increase.
Silly numbers bandied around. So
I know with the CBA that it's a lot more beneficial to the guys on the lower end of the pay scale and get like some 20-25% pay bump over whatever they're making right now at the very minimum.
Right.
You know, would you want to be an anonymous backup versus an XFL star?
What's the average backup quarterback salary? It's got to be above league minimum. I imagine it's got to be in the $2-3 million range, doesn't it?
I mean, it doesn't have to be.
But for a guy that...
I mean, Geno Smith, for example, was right, making about $1 million.
So, yeah, I mean, I think we all can agree that PJ Walker's as good as Geno Smith, right?
And would you rather double your pay or not double your pay?
Well, I think at that point, I think the XFL has an interesting decision to make at the end of this season as to how all in they are.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to be a viable, successful league, I think it's better for them to be able to keep a couple of those big name, you know, their big name stars in house. And so you gotta be competitive with bottom of the roster NFL pay for these guys. You have to.
That will be something to watch, because otherwise I could see, yeah, PJ Walker just going and being a backup somewhere like in Seattle.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen the other quarterbacks that are playing in the XFL.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've got XFL thoughts, actually.
Oh, a lot of them?
Well, more just about the quarterback position and just the idea that it took so many of these coaches so long to find the correct quarterback to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to me.
Well, they didn't have that much of an offseason.
So what? Like, I could have told you that Matt McGloin was going to blow, okay? And after watching Luis Perez go out there in the AAF or the AFL or whatever the hell it was
AAF,
called. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And be a competent player. Like, I knew that he was a better player than Matt McGloin. Like, I knew that Brandon Silvers sucked all the balls all the time and that BJ was better.
Yeah.
I knew that. And lo and behold, BJ is better. Like, that was very easy to see. And you go down the list of these different teams. I mean, they finally just benched Cardale Jones and put in their backup, better player. There was a battle. There was a literal quarterback battle between Connor Cook and PJ Walker.
Yeah.
Connor Cook, who is a dumpster fire of enormous magnitudes. Uh-huh. He was terrible at Michigan State. Terrible as a Raider. I never understood that.
Yeah, it turns out, you know, I'm noticing a consistent theme here of guys who in the NFL would drop back and be a pocket passer versus guys who are mobile and, you know, can move around and having success in a league like the XFL.
In the league like all the leagues, Brandon, because this is the difference now in professional football. You cannot have a statue. You can't have a statue of a quarterback. You just have guys that line up on the edge and they know at 7.5 yards where you're going to be standing and they can tee off. That day and era is long freaking gone. You can't.
Unless you're a veteran and can make quick decisions or have an offensive line that can protect you well.
And you're even seeing that it gets difficult for those guys. I mean, shoot, Tom Brady is the best at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think his physical ability has deteriorated that much. Even with the tiny bit of deterioration they had, he was not amazing last year. And it's because he can't move. You just can't have that anymore. And if you're a piss poor thrower of the ball to begin with and a bad decision maker and you're a freaking statue, you're going to suck. And that's what we found out.
Which is what we found out. Yeah. So, been interesting to watch, and
I like it. I like the XFL. It's not something I'm going to clear out my schedule for.
No, but if it's on.
But I love that I was sitting around the other day. I was like, oh crap,
there's XFL's football. How about that?
Cool. All right, yeah.
Hey, it's kind of like when we get a new member of the flock in the off season. It's like, oh, hey.
Some people that are way too kind.
So welcome to the flock this week. We'll start off with Clemens Stotter, who came in at $3. Welcome to the flock to Clemens. He's all the way over in Austria.
Holy smokes, really?
Yeah, that was our group four winner.
Oh, so as long as the, you know, boogeyman virus blows over by then, I'm going to Austria end of June.
Oh, really?
Beginning of July. Yeah. Yeah. The kid was selected as one of the high school players to go over and perform in Vienna for, you know, practice for a week and then perform in, you know, this big music hall that's pretty amazing. So I'm going to go with her.
Wow.
And yeah, so maybe I'll bump into Clemens. That'd be cool. Or at least get some tips on, you know, where to go.
Huh. Sounds like your daughter's doing stuff.
She's achieves at a level that definitely is above the genetics I gave her.
Good for her.
Yeah. I mean, when she's starting to apply for colleges, I would actually put me down as a dad, just genetically speaking, and the abilities that I would have passed on to her as a disability to try to get more scholarships. I think that's fair.
She's got a lot to overcome.
Right.
Also, thanks to Craig Clifford, who gave us a raise from $3 to $5. Thanks to Craig.
Ooh, that's awesome. That must mean he's enjoying what you're doing this offseason.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to give the people what they want.
That's exactly right. And apparently, you're giving Craig exactly what he'd like.
Yeah. Nathan Santo, end of the flock, the host of the Seahawks Nest. So welcome to the flock to Nathan Santo, in at $10.
Dude, Nathan, thanks, man. And, you know, appreciate your guys' show, too. That's awesome.
Yeah, I just did a show with Nathan just last night for field goals. So,
oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't caught that yet.
No, you wouldn't have, because I think it posted maybe 2 hours before we started talking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, and again, just because being in the bunker, my latency, you know, as far as getting stuff down here is delayed. But
if you would have been on it, though, even with your download speed, if you were sitting on the podcast feed like you should be and waiting intently for the new episode to release and then downloading it, you could have had it listened to by the time we started. So,
God, well, I apologize to both you and Nathan for not having done that. So,
yeah,
well, I'll do better.
Apology accepted for now.
At least
I expect a report by 5 p.m.
OK.
All right. I do expect a few of you to send me an email. Those of you who are prize winners, week 10, Kevin, week 9, Pete's Clownies, and week 11, Justin, from Your Picks Don't Count. I need to get your email addresses so I can get prizes out. I've gotten all the top 10 prizes out, and I'm working my way through weeks 7 through 16. And so if you were in that category, I have what's left of the prizes from the Pick'em League, and now I'm giving people a choice of who's left and letting them go through the list of what's left. So that's what we're doing.
Well, yeah, get after it, guys, because like for Justin, like his picks did count. And so
he got a win out of the deal.
Got a win out of it. So yeah.
So let me know.
Come get your prizes, man.
And getintheflock.com. If you want to help support the show through the off season and, you know, get notified when shows come out and all that kind of jazz.
Yeah.
That's the place to do it.
Absolutely, bud.
One of our members of the flock, Leo, came in, says, I was listening a second time to the Greg Olson signing podcast, and I'd like to submit the following to regroup the non-Seahawks NFC West teams. Catfish the 40 Carter Rams.
Okay. So
that way we can group all the teams together as the 40 Carter Rams.
40 car. Oh, so like
49ers, Cardinals, Rams, all combined into one name.
Okay, I thought the middle was like Carter, not Cardi.
No, we don't. I don't think we play a team named the Carters.
That's why I was confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just have to enunciate the D a little.
Maybe we can come up with an acronym.
Maybe. Maybe that works better.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Leo, Adam says your idea sucks. Come up with a better idea.
Do not put words in my mouth. I was just thinking like, I mean, because that's better than anything we did.
Right. Yeah, he's at least trying.
Exactly. Where we're just, mailing it in as usual. So, yeah. Better at life to Leo. And how dare you? How dare you try to tell me that, try to make
there's
me
no,
tell Leo.
There's no bad ideas in brain. What I tried to tell Adam, Leo, is that there are no bad ideas in brainstorming.
Wow. You know, it's crazy. Right in the small of my back, I have these tire tracks from both axles just went right over top of me.
Yeah.
When the bus went by.
You like that?
Yeah. Ouch.
Got a couple of reviews in from the last couple of weeks. One that says, join the flock. This came in on Apple Podcasts from Sketchy J. It says, great podcast that I always look forward to. Adam always gives us a dose of reality, and Brandon is a total pro. Listen, subscribe, and join the flock to chat with a great group of fans. If not, Skip Bayless is better at life than you.
That's awesome, man. I didn't know it, but my entire life, I've been seeking the approval of Sketchy J, and now I feel like my life is complete. That is awesome.
It's complete. BJ Pester comes in, says, let's go. This is such a good podcast. Catfish non-Hawks teams. Go Hawks.
You know, that sums it up nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The NHT, the non-Hawks teams. Catfish them.
Yeah, your idea sucks, Brandon.
I know. I'm just...
No, NHTs, that's not bad.
NHTs.
That's not bad.
Okay.
The thing is if we could get a vowel after the first consonant so that it could be a word, like the best acronyms end up being like DARPA. You know, are things that turn into a word.
Yeah.
That aren't really a word, but sound like a word.
This is good. This feel like we're building upon this idea. See, somebody's going to hear this and they're going to go, I know exactly what we're going to do.
Yeah, like Leo. He'll probably come up with something that's even more amazing than his first good idea.
What do you say we move on to do better and better at life?
All right, man. I'll go first here with my do better. My do better this week is for the website FanSided. You've seen articles for them, I'm sure.
Oh, sure.
Over the years. In this article, the headline is so stupid that the writer didn't even put their name in there in a byline. So I can't even call out the writer for it. They were too ashamed to add their name to it. So title of the article, did the Rams already miss their Super Bowl window?
Catfish!
Duh! Yes! And apparently they don't listen to the podcast because we told you all about this when they were ramping up to their, quote, Super Bowl window where they lucked into one when the league decided that football needed to work in LA and they made sure that they got there for a year. We said that right out of the gate that this free agent signing that they did and this mercenary style approach to building a team would ultimately backfire and that they overpaid a crap quarterback in Goff, Joe Flacco 2.0, that they overpaid for Todd Gurley, who was the second coming of Walter Payton. And, I don't know if you remember this, Brandon, but we were right. We were right about that. And not only is their Super Bowl window closed, it's closed for a long time because of those terrible contracts.
Yeah.
That's screwed.
Between bad contracts and not having draft picks, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. And then I forgot about trading all your draft picks away for the right to overpay Jalen Ramsey. So that's cool. Yeah. And so at the end of the day, the guys that don't understand that the Rams are dead now, do better.
Yeah, you should have written this article a while ago and saying it definitively. The Rams have missed their Super Bowl window.
Period.
The question's been answered. You guys are way behind.
Not question mark. Yeah.
Catfish
Rams.
Well, my do better this week is also for a site that that promotes NFL type information, but it's actually NFL.com. And Cynthia Freeland recently, she has built this incredible model to generate the best picks for each team. Now, taking in all the information, and actually it quotes in the mock draft. I know you didn't want to talk mock drafts anymore, Adam, but we're doing it here. And I think this will be an okay spot to do it in within the segment, because she says it, quote, considers the market of potential free agents at each position and creates, quote, projected win contribution metrics by player. Mm-hmm. And the results, quote, quantify strengths and weaknesses of current NFL rosters, unquote, and, quote, factors in as many known elements of coaching philosophies. Mm-hmm. So as you can see, this model has been built taking you know, many different things into consideration for each team.
Sure. It's powered by Skynet.
Yeah. She didn't put that in there, but I can imagine that Skynet has something to do with this.
Absolutely.
And she...
I think the Mayan calendar is calculated in as well.
It turns out, she says, it examines each season's on-field results, objectively analyzing what happened while identifying the trends and strategies that led to success or failure.
Oh, my... So,
catfish! Dude.
Not quite the Mayan calendar, but, you know, it's close. So with all this input put in and more, her data suggests that the most logical first-round selection for the Seattle Seahawks is... Wait for it.
I'm waiting.
A cornerback. The Seahawks will draft a cornerback, according to Cynthia Freeland's model, in the first round of the NFL draft. Something that's never once ever been done before by the Seahawks of the Pete Carroll regime. Draft a cornerback with their first selection overall. And that's what the model is predicting. Cynthia Freeland, your model, for all the things that it didn't take into consideration, is the fact that this is something that the Seahawks don't do. Do better.
Yeah, so I have a theory about Cynthia Freeland. I mean, I've seen her like little prognostications based on, you know, the rise of the machines and AI and all that crap, right? Yeah. Like over the course of the last year or so at NFL.com, and she gets a lot of play for it as well. I tend to think that she is somebody who just memorized big math terms and bought a TI-92 calculator from back in the day. Yeah. You know, like the big brick sized one, and like just is plugging variables in.
I think she legit knows math, Adam. Voila. Come on now.
I don't know, man, because these things don't make a lot of sense.
And not only did she pick a corner, but what's the threshold of arm length that we know about Seahawks cornerbacks? That Pete Carroll likes to get dudes with 32 inch arms.
Right.
AJ Terrell of Clemson has 31 1/4 inch arms.
And he clearly won't fit in the system because of that.
Baby T-Rex arms are not going to get you. They're frowned upon by Pete Carroll.
That's true. That's true.
So,
you know what else is frowned upon, Brandon?
What's that?
Is getting an hour and 28 minutes into the podcast and realizing that the deck stopped recording or never started.
Good thing I have my backup.
Okay.
You bonked me and everything.
I know. I hit the button.
Son of a
catfish.
Yeah. Give me a drink.
Well, you know who's not going to get better at life?
Me.
You.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I will give a better at life to the XFL.
Okay.
Because as Hector Mark pointed out in the Ring of Honor, that, you know, they did the really cool thing about coming back after the Dragons, who aren't the Sea Dragons, they're the Dragons. I've got that down now.
It only took you half of the XFL season to figure it out, but that's cool.
You know, I'm a slow learner. But, you know, the Dragons and the Renegades, they went down to the wire, and P.J. Walker took a knee with time left on the clock with fourth down. And the referee came out and said, well, the game's over because we said it was over. I mean, you know, time, schmime, whatever. Doesn't much matter. I said so.
What's 2 seconds left on the clock when you're down by one score and a potential conversion?
Correct. Yes. So the referee basically came out and gave a response that my mom would often give when I was growing up, because I said so. The one I can't stand more than any other phrase in parenting. And the XFL, to their credit, came out the next day and we're like, our bad. We screwed it up and we're moving this guy somewhere else. And we're going to get crap right. And when we get crap wrong, you're going to find out about it oftentimes in real time, because they, you know, kind of let you in on the conversation, as these refs have it in many occasions.
Yeah.
And then even after the fact, are, you know, humble enough, have enough transparency, and, you know, actually care about what the fans think to offer an apology when they get stuff wrong. I mean, that's way better than a different football league that we follow quite a bit. So to the XFL, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, juxtapose that with the terrible missed pass interference call that led to the Rams going to the Super Bowl, and the NFL didn't even come out and say anything because, oh, we said we told Sean Payton we were sorry, and he came out and and let everybody know that we said we were sorry. So we don't need to issue a statement. And then we'll put in a rule change. So to make everything better the next year, and then completely spend the entire year trying to figure out how we can make the rule so that everybody hates it and we can not bring it back the following year.
Oh, sure. Yeah, a little bit like the Steelers Super Bowl, you know, where you get jobbed on a couple calls there and you don't really get an apology until 10 years after the fact by the referee, kind of, you know, behind the NFL's back.
Yeah. To a team full of players that weren't even playing at the Super Bowl, coached by a different dude.
Right. I mean, it still helped, but I mean, the fans, but yeah, man, imagine how much better you would have felt as a fan if the league would have said something like the week after that game.
Yeah. We screwed up.
Yeah.
Bill Levy's not going to ref the Super Bowl anymore.
There we go.
Make me feel a little better.
I'd have felt better at life, or better about life. That's for sure.
My better at life this week is for Nesby Glasgow, who lost his battle with cancer at the end of February, just back on February 25th. A guy who we've had on the show a couple different times. And he was a guy that he actually reached out to me at one point and said, hey, you know, it's been a while.
That's awesome.
How about we talk? And you know, I can't say that I've ever had a former player for an NFL team ever do that. So definitely endeared me to Nesby Glasgow, and hearing from him personally when I guess I hadn't seen the article about him even battling cancer when I talked to him last. And so, yeah, it was tough to hear that news that he passed away and lost his battle with cancer. A star at the University of Washington. He's an 8th round pick by the Baltimore Colts in 1979. Came back to Seattle in 1988, played 5 seasons to finish his career. I saw the Colts who put out a statement, and they put out some interesting statistics on his career. They said in his 14 years in the NFL, he racked up 15 interceptions, 17 fumble recoveries, and had 9 sacks. And with those 3 stats combined, since the AFL-NFL merger, there's only been 13 guys in the NFL to put up those kind of numbers.
Wow.
And 5 of those 13 are Hall of Fame dudes: Rod Woodson, Brian Dawkins, Ray Lewis, Junior Seau, and Charles Woodson. So he's in company with 8 other guys that didn't make the Hall of Fame, or 7 other guys that didn't make the Hall of Fame with those types of numbers. And I guess Woodson hasn't made it yet, but he's going to be a Hall of Famer. So I include him in there, but impressive career overall. And just, man, what a genuinely nice guy to talk to. Yeah. He had, was not a big guy in the NFL and always talked about how he liked laying the wood as a safety, so as defensive back. And for Nesby Glasgow, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well deserved. And a really, really genuinely nice guy and a friend of the show. And he obviously will be dearly missed. And good for you, man. I'm glad you wrapped up the show with that.
Yeah. It's a bummer. It's especially, you know, hitting the off season, and you kind of look for those guys to talk to. And he was on my list of guys that I wanted to definitely reach out to in the off season and get back on. So
sure.
Bummer that, best wishes to all his family members as well. And I think with that, Adam,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. And that's all you can ask out of a dude. If at all possible, he'll strap it up and give it to you.